chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Deb Liu on the show today. Deb is an author and the CEO of Ancestry. Well, welcome everyone to the Something Extra podcast. I'm so delighted today to have Deb Liu on the show with me. Deb is the CEO for Ancestry.com. She's got just an illustrious career she's had, and we'll talk about that. But Deb, thank you so much for being on the show. You're sitting in Silicon Valley and I'm in St. Louis. But thankfully, because of technology, we can do this, right?
Yes, it's great to connect and it's an honor to be here.
Yes, well, thank you so much because I know how busy you are. But I always love to go back and tell our listeners kind of how we got connected. A lot of my listeners probably know Cheryl Batchelder, who was the former CEO for Popeyes, dear friend. And Cheryl is the one that had said to the two of us, you need to meet one another. And she was right. And I'm just delighted that she made that connection for us.
Yes, she's lovely. And I learned so much from her.
Mm-hmm. Me too. You know, and I'm just thinking about this, really, Deb, talking about connecting. And I know we'll talk about mentors and sponsors and networking and all of those sorts of things that are a key piece of business. But, you know, just to encourage our listeners, if you feel like when you're talking to somebody and you're like, you know, I think Deb or Lisa could really benefit from knowing this person, go that next step and make that connection because amazing things can happen that way, right?
Yeah, you know, recently I wrote an article called How to Become a Connector. And somebody told me, you know, Deb, you're such a connector. And I said, I don't really look at it that way. And so I kind of took an audit of a couple weeks and I said, how many people did I connect? And I actually wrote it all out. And I realized that I didn't think about it as an intentional thing. I actually kind of just did it because, you know, there was somebody who said, hey, I had a question about, you know, starting a nonprofit. And I said, I know somebody who started a nonprofit. She's the right person. I reached out to her and she said, absolutely. I'd love to talk to him. And suddenly two people are going to, you know, have an opportunity to see how they can learn from each other. And it's this type of thing where, you know, magic happens. And when the right connection happens, it's an honor for both people to actually be connected with each other.
Oh, that is so good. I love that. I'll have to go back and read that article. We're going to talk about that because you've got so much amazing content out there. But as you were talking, it just kind of made me think yesterday, I told you it was the big Gateway to Innovation Conference here in St. Louis. And one of the keynotes yesterday, I just noted, he was talking about being a value creator in other people's lives, yes. Obviously in your organization, but every organization is made up of people, right, Deb? Yes. So be a value creator. And when you make that connection to your point, magic can happen. That is creating value for that person and for the two people that you're connecting or multiple people in some cases, but so much goodness there. Well, I tell you what, I told you before we started, I've got about 30 pages of notes. There is so much I want to cover with you, seriously, because there is so much to you, Deb, and you've got so much experience and so many insights. You've written a book called Take Back Your Power. We're going to talk about that. 10 New Rules for Women at Work. And I would encourage our listeners, I promise you, go out, follow Deb. She puts amazing content out there through Perspectives. She's got her book. You're going to want to follow this woman because you're going to learn from her. So I'm hoping, Deb, we can get through a fraction, really, of the things that I want to talk about. But you're married to David. Your husband is David. You've got three children, Jonathan, Bethany, Danielle. You live in Silicon Valley, as we've already talked about. You're just doing a lot of things, but take us back if you would. I would love to talk about how you grew up, because I know you grew up in Queens, or you were born in Queens, but you actually yeah. grew up right in a small town in South Carolina.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I grew up in New York with my family up until I was six. And because of discrimination at work, my dad was really fed up, and his friend said, why don't you come to South Carolina? The government doesn't discriminate. And on the word of his friend, we moved down to South Carolina, a place my parents had never been. And I grew up in a place where no one looked like me. And I just think about, you know, that experience of being the other all the time and being the, you know, the foreigner, people coming up to my family in the streets and saying, go back to where you came from. And I remember thinking, New York, you know, because I didn't know I was different until I got to a place where I looked different to everybody. Mm-hmm. But in so many ways, that was very formative for me because it gave me the opportunity to see the world from a very different perspective. And I learned so much from that experience, and that growing up in a place where I was really different, it gave me a rich interior life. It gave me goals. It gave me a lot of intentionality to actually leave that place and do something different and live in a different place someday. And while I still have, you know, fond memories of South Carolina, I also know that that's not something which there was a lot of hurt from that. And I had to spend a lot of time getting over that hurt. And now I can look back and see how that was the making of me in so many ways too.
Right. Oh my goodness. I'm just reminded as you're talking, I'm just reminded of the awesome quote that says, you know, we're shaped by our past, but we, and our experiences, but we don't have to be defined by that. Right. And so you used those things. You know, Deb, it also reminds me, a dear, dear friend of mine, that is actually a doctor now. She's my doctor. She was born in Iraq. And there were eight kids. And they moved to the States. And I'll never forget her telling me that it was so hurtful. Because like you, she moved to a place where there were no people like her, you know? And she said, you know, they would tell, you know, they would call them names and all this. And even walking home from school, they would throw rocks at them. Deb, it's so awful. And fortunately, this sweet woman on the route home from school saw what was happening and would invite all eight of them into her house and feed them cookies. And they would kind of stay there for a couple hours just to kind of, you know, not be in the crowd so that they were not discriminating. It's wrong. It's wrong. And it breaks my heart that happens. But, you know, certainly in your case, like you said, it really did kind of shape you and give you a different perspective.
Absolutely. I mean, I like to say that you can be the victim or beneficiary of your own history and your own experience, and you can choose. You know, for a long time, I was very angry and very upset. And then I realized, you know what? I would not be where I am today, but for the fact that I had those formative experiences, but for the fact that I learned to stand up for myself, that I learned, you know, to have goals and intentions and choices, and that I could choose to allow that to crush me, or I could choose to allow that to be something which is a springboard to where I want to go. And, you know, a lot, we don't get to choose. There's a quote I have in the book of Chuck Swindoll, which is, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% what you choose to do about it. And I live by that, which is, you make a choice. You know, you don't get to choose what happens to you. You get to choose what happens next.
Oh, that is so good. That is so rich. I love that. I'm going to be using that quote now myself. So thank you for pointing that out. But I want to spend some time here because, you know, you went to Duke, studied civil engineering. I bet there weren't many women in your class, were there, Deb?
No, well, I mean, engineering at the time, you know, my dad was an engineer, and so my sister is an engineer. She was studying engineering when I went to undergrad, and so I chose engineering because I just thought we could be like my dad. And it never occurred to me that girls didn't study engineering until I got to my first physics class, and it was 70 people, and there were like five girls in there, and I thought, what happened to all the girls? And I guess it just never occurred to me. I mean, again, growing up in a small town where you don't see a lot of role models. My dad was somebody, you know, I really admired, and so I wanted to follow his footsteps. And, you know, I think not knowing helped me actually, because it didn't say you can't do this. I just thought, well, my dad and sister did it. I'm going to do this too. And so, but I think walking into that room, I realized that I was different from a lot of people in that room, and I could let that be a problem, or I could say, you know what, I could do this. And I reflect on that because recently I went to a CEO conference. There's 250 people in that room. It was like, I think there were 11 women, you know, 11 women CEOs, and I was the only woman of color. And I looked around again, just like I did, you know, when I went to my first physics class, and I thought, I don't look like people here. But then I thought to myself, you know what? If I'm the only woman of color here, there are very few women. If I show up well, next year there's gonna be another one and another one and another one. You don't get to choose the rooms you walk into, but you choose how to respond to it.
Oh, that's so good. I love that. And, I'm thinking a couple things as you were saying that. I mean, really and truly, kind of being that trailblazer for other women, right? And having the courage to, I love what you said about really not knowing. And that's a blessing, right? Because you really were like, why wouldn't I do this, right? But having the courage to do that really kind of creates the pathway for others. There is a famous quote. I know you know this quote. It's Marian Edelman that says, "You cannot be what you can't see."
Yes.
So other women need to see, that, hey, girls can do engineering. And, I love that. Well, this is funny, and I kind of want to talk about this a little bit because you say, and I don't know if it's in your book or one of the articles that I read that you wrote, but you said you graduated with honors practically without speaking a word. And I think, kind of what we had talked about before, you kind of adopted a little bit of this schema of thinking, I just kind of want to be unnoticeable, so I'm not going to speak. But then you went to MBA, you went to Stanford for your MBA. Stanford obviously is ranked in the top 15 schools in the country. Awesome school. But this is where you figured out you could no longer be silent, right?
Yes. Well, you know, because of how I grew up, I just thought if I could just make myself smaller, if people didn't notice me, then they won't comment. They won't constantly kind of make fun of, you know, how I was different if I just was invisible. And so I learned to be invisible as much as possible. And I could do that because in school, you have this thing, you know, you just take the test, you know, you take the SAT, you go to college. In engineering school, you did the problem sets, you did the, you know, you never had to actually speak to do well in school. And then I went to consulting where it was so important to work with clients. And I remember my manager saying, "You're not good at the client part of the client service." And I thought, whoa, and it had to learn that, you know, part of that is the relationship building was actually more important than the hard skills of doing the analysis. But I'm like, my analysis is good, my slides are great. And they said, that's not what the job is. The job is a relationship as well. And I learned that the hard way. So I went to business school, and that's where 30 to 50% of your grades is class participation. And I thought, I've got to learn this. And through that evolution, it actually helped me open up because it forced me to learn speaking up as a skill. So rather than feeling like I was cornered, I had to decide, what am I going to do about this? And I decided I'm going to learn to speak up because that's what's required of me at this moment. And I believe in evolution and constantly learning. And that gave me the opportunity to really learn to speak up. And it has benefited me throughout my life. Even as an introvert, you know, those experiences made it possible for how I got to where I am today.
Well, let's, I'm going to pivot here a little bit. I was going to talk about that a little bit later, but let's go ahead and talk about that, the extroversion versus the introverts, right? You quote, I think it's Truity Psychometrics found that around 50% of the working professionals are actually introverts. You also talk about Susan Cain's book, Quiet. And there is, unfortunately, in the world, and in the workplace, there is definitely an unconscious bias, I think, toward extroverts. Ability to share and show up and speak up in meetings. But you know what I love about you? Deb, you said this is not like an necessarily an inborn personality trait. I mean, I think there is a degree of that, but you said you treated it like a skill that you could learn. So tell us, I mean, you've got just a few practical things that you can do, to help you get over this, or tell us about your own journey with that.
Well, in ancestry and DNA testing, we actually have a trait, and one of the traits is actually introversion. And I'm definitely far on the introversion side, but that doesn't have to define you. Just because you prefer your own company and you don't get energy from other people doesn't mean you can't learn how to speak up as a skill. And I separate those two things very intentionally because I hear a lot of people say, well, I can't do what you do. I'm an introvert. And I'm like, no. You don't get energy from other people, but that doesn't mean you can't actually engage with them. And so now by treating as a skill, I actually had to force myself. So I have a learning mindset, but I also have these ways of tracking. So in order to force myself to do class participation, I used to have a tally mark, how many times I spoke, for how long, then how well I felt like it went. And over time, it just comes more much, much more naturally. And I think one of the things that we struggle with is if we define ourselves, it's kind of like saying, this is who I am, I can't change it. But what if we said, this is who I am? A lot of people say, I'm bad at math or languages. That doesn't mean that you don't learn math or languages. It's just part of what you have to learn. And maybe it's harder for you, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it. And so I treat this as the same way when I coach people. I just say, hey, I get it that you're an introvert. So am I. But here's a skill you need to learn to be successful. And you get to choose whether you invest your time in it or not. And suddenly, when you put it that way, people go, oh, actually, I could learn the skill. I can get better at this. Maybe I won't be in the front of the TED Talk stage, and that's okay. But so much, and we were talking about this before we got on, so many promotions and conversations around ratings at work and how people perceive you is so much about how you show up. It's like 90% what you show up as and 10% what you actually do, which is unfortunate because I actually think your skills and your impact on the company is the 90% you spend your time on. But so much of the bias in the workplace is who speaks up, who shows up, who, people will say, well, we should promote him because, he did that great presentation. But we said, well, what about her? And they said, well, she doesn't answer questions as quickly. And I said, well, what if she takes more time to process, but her work is objectively better, her team is stronger? And so I do think it is a bias in the workplace, but we have to understand that bias is going to play against us if we do nothing. And so you have to choose what you do.
Yeah, that's so good. Oh, we could probably spend a whole podcast on this, Deb, because speaking up, but speaking up in the wrong way can really be a turnoff too, right? And you don't want someone with a lot of hubris and that sort of thing. But we all do have opinions and we are all creative. We are all you have greatness inside of us. So, right? But it's being confident to let your voice be heard. So I love that so much. And I love that you see it that way. And that might help some of our listeners, but let's talk about your career. So, wow. Did you prove anybody wrong, Deb, that you could be somebody amazing one day? 'Cause you have just had an outstanding career. I want to just rattle off a few things and then I'm going to do a deeper dive into some of these. But you started off with Boston Consulting. You went to eBay. You did some amazing things at PayPal that we'll talk a little bit about because I know you had a mentor there that really helped you. Then you ended up at Facebook, and we're going to spend a lot of time there. And now you're the CEO for Ancestry. So you have just done some amazing things. But here's what I really want you to do. I want to start with Facebook And I want you to tell our listeners the story about Facebook. When you went into Sheryl Sandberg's office in 2009, she was the COO at the time. And you go in there and you're interviewing for a role on their consumer monetization team. And Sheryl said she was incredibly impressed with your product knowledge, your ability to build teams, all of this. But tell us about what happened in that interview, because it is so amazing. And there's so many lessons there in my mind.
Yeah, you know, it was 2009 and I was just, you know, I had been at eBay and PayPal for 7 years and I loved it. And then a friend had joined Facebook and he's like, you need to come, you need to interview for this role. And I thought, you know, why not? At the time, the company was something like 900 people. So I think it's something like 60,000-70,000 today. And I met Sheryl. I mean, you know, it was not a huge company. And I pitched her, we had a great interview. And I said, by the way, Facebook should build a marketplace where people can buy and sell from each other. She kind of looked at me and she said, what? And I didn't know what she thought actually until she wrote the forward to my book, what actually her reaction was, which is she's not interviewing. She doesn't want to do the job I'm hiring her for. Should I hire her? But, you know, we ended up, I worked in consumer monetization. I love that project. I did so many cool things in the company over the years. And yet every year I pitched building Facebook Marketplace. And I thought someday I'm going to get a chance to do this if I do a really good job. So I worked on games and payments for many years. I led platform. I worked on the first direct response ad and the ad network. I helped build, you know, so many things. And then over the years, I had an opportunity to do, you know, to build teams and move around the company. And I kept every year, I would say, we should build Facebook Marketplace. And in 2015, finally, we had a chance to do it. And it was not an overnight success. It took many, many, many years to make it work. But today it has over 1 billion people using it, which is so incredible. Every month, 1 billion people use this little product that, you know, I pitched. And it's been an honor of a lifetime to be a part of that because, you know, it is something which helps so many people. And the reason it was so close to my heart was that I was one of the few moms in the company as a product leader. And I was actually the only mom for many, many years. And I would buy and sell from all these people. And everybody else is like, why would you ever buy anything on Facebook? And now it's, you see all these amazing ads, you go and you can buy things. Like I sold my car on Facebook Marketplace. And so, you know, to really change a product and to build something that has such lasting impact, even to this day, even with my current job, people still say, by the way, we love Ancestry, but you built Facebook Marketplace and I just bought X, and they tell me these great stories as well. And so I do love the legacy and how it has just had such a positive impact on people's lives.
Mm-hmm. I think that is just amazing. There's so many lessons there, Deb. And, you know, one of the things, and I've got a book here on my, desk called The Leader's Playlist, and it's all about creativity and thinking out of the box and, you know, how even music, you know, will help leaders think differently. But I mean, really and truly, you go in there to interview for this one, and then you're pitching a new idea. I mean, they could have gone, you know, because Cheryl could have said, hey, you know what? Deb's not going to be happy here, you know, because she's got these other grandiose ideas. But, you know, just having the courage to come forward and look, and there's a monetization component to that, right? I mean, Facebook gets a little bit of a percentage. But why wouldn't you do that? All these people are already connected.
Yes. Well, it was just, you know, I really believe that what was amazing about Facebook is the ability to connect people through community. And one of the ways that people do and, you know, build community is buying and selling. And so, it's because also I feel like there's too much stuff in the world. And, you know, one of the things I did was for each of my kids, I would buy them a bike on Marketplace and then I would sell it back when they outgrew it because I don't need a garage full of bikes, right? I had bought them scooters on Marketplace. I sold them back. And I feel like it's like on loan to me for a period of time until the next family can enjoy it. And it's not about the money. It's about seeing it go to somebody else, seeing it be passed on because, you know, kids outgrow so many things. And I just love that, you know, there's less stuff in the world and there's more stuff for people to enjoy.
That's brilliant. I love that. Well, Deb, we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast with Deb Blue.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Deb Liu. So, Deb, oh, wow. Everything that we talked about so far, I've absolutely loved, but I've got a lot more that I wanted to discuss with you. But I love this about you. You founded the Women in Product Group in the Bay Area. And, you know, I had said to you, I love that because you basically saw a gap there and you saw that there weren't as many women in, you know, product managers and that kind of thing. And so you said, okay, you know, I can either sit back and wait for somebody else to solve this challenge, or I can step forward and do it. But you founded that group. Tell us about the group. What was your objective? What were you hoping to accomplish?
You know, we kind of stumbled into it. For years, because there were so few women product leaders at Facebook, we used to host these dinners. And for 4 years, we hosted a dinner every quarter. And during one of the dinners, we said, you know, why isn't there a Grace Hopper conference for women product leaders? And we decided with a group of people at the table, we're going to start our own conference, which I know sounds completely insane, but 10 women got together and we started our own conference. And we thought, you know, we got Facebook to host it and there were 300 seats. And then we opened up registration and 3,000 people applied. And we thought, what do we do? And we didn't have any thoughts about creating a nonprofit. We just wanted to do a conference. We thought it would be fun. I know how insane that sounds today, but it was 2016 and we just opened it up and it was such an incredible experience. The energy, we created a Facebook group. You know, that group has 30,000 people now. We have chapters in 24 cities. You know, it has just become so important for women to connect. And you see this community where people are helping each other find jobs, where they're helping each other enter the industry or, you know, coaching each other. And it's just been such an amazing opportunity and such an amazing community. And I realized that sometimes you have an idea and sometimes an idea just catches you mm-hmm. at the right time. Mm-hmm. And for this group of women, you know, many of them are still on the board, the founding members, and we still continue to this day. And now we have a staff. So we used to do this ourselves in our spare time, which was right. a lot with everything else going on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we, you know, this year we'll host another conference and it'll be a few thousand people. And it's going to be really incredible. And I do think one of the challenges is sometimes when you hear the calling, the answer is, do you answer? And that's a choice. You know, it was a busy time in our lives also. But I think, you know, a small group of women decided to do it. And now we've just helped so many people do so many things. And it's just been a huge honor to be a part of this journey.
I love it. Well, if we have listeners that are like, I want to go to that conference. I mean, how would they find that, Deb?
Yeah. So just search Women in Product Conference and our conference is coming right up. So I look forward to it. It's in the next couple months.
Awesome. Well, I hope you have some listeners that'll reach out to you. Here's what I want to talk about next. We've already mentioned Sheryl Sandberg, a COO for Facebook. And in 2013, she pulled you aside and she said a few words to you that was a moment that really changed your life. What were those words?
She said, you can stop fighting now. You've won. And she wasn't talking about fighting for you know, rights or for people like me to show up in the leadership room. What she was saying was, I had so much fight and this chip on my shoulder growing up the way I did. I told you that, you know, I used that energy from where I grew up and how people treated me as rocket fuel. And it just, you know, I fought for everything. I got to the school that I wanted. I got a scholarship. I graduated near the top of the class. I went on to, you know, a great consulting firm. I went to a top business school. And I was like, I am going to achieve something to prove everybody wrong. But I realized something, that energy of fighting for what I wanted and for a place was also turning people off. It was actually breaking connections. It was actually alienating for other people. And I had to decide, like, what, you know, because these are not people on the other side of me. These are the people who were supporting me. And I realized that energy of fighting was no longer productive. And I needed to figure out how to channel that. And so now, you know, I realized also that so much of life is really bringing people along with you as opposed to seeing everybody on the other side of you. And it's taken me some time. I wish I could say overnight I changed, but I didn't. But what I did was it forced me to reflect on, is every conversation a battle or is it an opportunity to connect? And once you change that mindset, it actually changes the way you look at the world, because now everyone's a potential ally, not a potential adversary.
That's so good. So good. Well, you were at Facebook for 11 years and you did a lot of different things. I mean, you've already named a few of those, but every 2 or 3 years you did something different. So you really just got to experience and broaden your leadership while you were there. But during COVID, you said you really had a time of self-discovery. And I love this quote. You said at some point, what you realize is you're doing more than you are learning. And I know you are a high growth mindset person, but you know, what happened during that time? You actually had a call from someone with an opportunity. So tell us about that journey.
Yeah. So Jim Citrin, who's a recruiter for boards and for CEO positions all over Silicon Valley, called and said, I'd like you to interview for this public company CEO position. And I just thought, the first email I got, actually, I thought it was they were joking. So I actually screenshotted it and sent it to my sister, my brother-in-law, and my husband, and we had a good laugh about it. And then I actually sat down and had dinner with him, and he's like, no, seriously. They said, why me? And he said, why not you? And suddenly he just really changed the way I looked at the world, because he said, every CEO has their first CEO position at some point. You know, why not you? And I really had to internalize that and understand that, you know, this was the next step for me. And, you know, that one didn't work out. And Jim and I still stay in touch. But, you know, it didn't work out at the time. But it opened my mind to the possibilities of what was an opportunity I had never really considered. You know, you had asked me earlier, you know, who did I prove wrong getting to where I am? And I said, myself. It would never have occurred to me that I could do this. And I had to prove myself wrong. And so, you know, later that year, this opportunity at Ancestry came up. And I, you know, at first I had the same questions. And it's just been such an honor to be a part of this storied company and to really kind of write our next chapter with the company. And so, but I would never have been open to that possibility had he not reached out.
That is good. Isn't that amazing? Words matter, don't they, Deb? And words people say literally can change the trajectory of how we see ourselves even. So that's just a good lesson for leaders too, you know, as they're coaching their people and coaching those on their team. But give us, so now you're the CEO for Ancestry. Give us, I know it's a $5 billion, it's the largest genealogy, you know, company. And I don't know if it's in the world, you know, probably. But give us some stats about Ancestry, if you would. Like, how old is Ancestry? How many people are involved, et cetera?
Yeah, Ancestry is a 40-year-old company, and it started as a publishing company, actually publishing genealogy guides. And over the years, it has come online. It is one of the earliest subscription companies in the world. We did online subscriptions before most of the subscriptions you ever heard, and we are the largest DNA genomics company. And we have, I think, something like 25 million people who've done the test and connect with each other in our community every day, which is super exciting. And, you know, what we do is really, you know, we bring together both the way that you discover your family story, you know, starting with your family tree and the discovering, you know, content, discovering new parts of your family you might have never known. And every year we bring on content, new content from all over the world, so that you can continue that journey of building out your family story. And our vision is to help everyone craft, connect, and discover around their family stories. And it's really about, you know, what makes us all, the reason I was so attracted to this company was that we all care about our families, but we're all part of the human family. And if we knew more about each other and we realized how interconnected we are and how much our journeys, you know, choices that people made in our family maybe 10 years ago, 100 years ago, how change, brought us to where we are today, that we would be, we would be more gentle with each other. We would connect more with each other. And that's I hope that people can see, which is your family gives you resilience, but they brought you to where you are today and their story matters too.
That is beautiful. I love that. Well, here's what I would love for you to just talk about a little bit here. So, because I'm thinking, okay, you're first time CEO. There may be other people that have just changed jobs, Deb, or they're stepping into the next level, right? And I love it because you said you developed your 30, 60, 90 day plan. How would you advise someone to go about completing this plan? And what I love about you, I can see the engineering side in you. You're incredibly creative, Deb, but you're also an engineer. And so you've got a system, basically, that you kind of went through. So can you just real quickly coach our listeners, if that is you, listener, take some words of advice from Deb.
So I wrote this guide to onboarding to a new job. And then I wrote a follow-up, which was how to have a 30, 60, 90 day plan. And, it starts with really listening. When you join a company, there's so much culture that you can't see when you're interviewing. There's so much norms, the way the culture works. And so one thing I did when I first showed up was, on my 30-day plan, I wanted to interview as many people as I could. So I think I spoke to 60 or 70 people. I took notes on all of them and I asked them the same five questions. And those five questions are actually in the document if you want to look it up. But the same five questions were, what would you do differently? What do you love? And you just see the passion that people had for their work, but also the things that they wish they could change if they had a magic wand. And, I collated that and I actually wrote a State of the Union at the end of that 30 days. And then 60, and each, I had milestones and commitments for the 30, 60, 90 days, because it gives you a guide, but it also gives the people around you a guide as to what you're hoping to learn and what you're hoping to contribute. And so, and by the way, at the end of year one, I wrote avoiding the pitfalls of starting a new job. And then I wrote all the things I did wrong in the first year. And I remember a friend of mine who also took a CEO position said, I read your post and I did all the same things. I made all the same mistakes. And I said, I wish I could have gone back in time and told myself these things. And so I wrote that for my future self and for all the future selves for you to say, you know what? It was hard because sometimes you make assumptions around how decisions are made or culture. You jump to conclusions. You blame the previous administration. And it really took me some time to understand those mistakes. And then looking back at a year gave me the opportunity to say, you know what? This is what I would have done differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that also gives people permission to say, you know what? You did that. That didn't work out, but at least you acknowledged it. Right. And so I think it's super powerful for you to actually have these milestones to say, this is what I learned. Here's what I hope for. And it gives you an opportunity to also say, these are the mistakes I made. And I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is brilliant. I mean, and here's the thing, those mistakes give you the opportunity to learn and to do better next time. Right, Deb? I mean, we're going to make mistakes. We're not going to do things perfectly. But if we can really take those times and kind of dissect them and say, okay, here are the learnings. Let's put that in our tool belt. So next time, maybe we don't make the same mistake. I mean, that's how we grow, really. That's how we grow. Well, I love this too. And you said that you kind of chose three themes for yourself when you started Ancestry, and they're learning, aligning, and executing.
Yes.
And I think
that was the 30, really 60, great. And 90, each of them were themes for each of them. And that way people know where you are and what you're thinking. I think one of the challenges is when you join a company, you come with a full set of experiences and background and you just expect everybody else to understand it. And they, everybody else has been in a culture where this is the water that they swim in. And you come in and it's a different temperature, a different color. It is maybe a different salination. And you go, wait, something was different. And really merging those two so that you can feel like you're really a sense of belonging takes time. And sometimes we don't give ourselves permission and time to actually acclimate. Mm-hmm. It's like jumping straight into the deep end of the pool. Maybe you start by tiptoeing in and really learning, who you are, where you belong, and what everybody else is doing around you as well.
That's so good. Well, I have a really dear friend that says everybody's got isms, Deb. So I've kind of adopted his vernacular. He'll say, here's a Lisa-ism, here's a John-ism. Well, I have a couple Deb-isms, you know, and I'm just going to just quote these. But you said, when you are starting, trust is the most important thing to build as you onboard into a new role. Trust.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And how one of the ways you do that, and I've never heard it put this way, but you said people are going to watch your say-do ratio.
Yes, absolutely.
And that is how you either tear down trust or build it, right? If you say it, they're going to watch if you do it and if you accomplish it. But, you know, the opposite can be true. So I've got another friend that says he watches people's feet more than he watches their mouth, which is a great way to put it too. But, yeah, I want to just touch on this and then we'll get into something extra. I really hope, you know, people go out and buy your book. We don't have a lot of time, to dig in here, but you know, just some of the chapters, know your playing field, don't give yourself a free pass, chart your own course, build a learning mindset, learn to forgive, develop allies, embrace who you are, create balance at home. Very important. Find your voice, make your mark. I would encourage people to go out and get the book. Why did you write the book, Deb?
Yeah, you know, it actually started, this is now almost 10 years ago, where I was teaching a new hire class and I had an open door policy. And so anyone could reach out to me for help. And sometimes people just ask really simple questions. And over time, I realized I was talking to two or three people a week. And it was starting, you know, it was going to take me another 8 years. So I talked to about 1,000 people the first 8 years. And I realized it's going to take me another 8 years to talk to 1,000 people. It just wasn't scalable. And so I thought a lot of the things I heard were themes that were very similar. And now I wrote that book and now tens of thousands of people can actually read the same thing, because a lot of those things were, you know, I feel like I'm stuck. What should I do? You know, I feel like I'm alone at work and, you know, or, hey, I'm struggling with my manager. And I talk a lot about some of those things. Like, I feel like I can't get promoted. And I talk about a lot of those themes because they're common to so many people, especially women in the workplace, where they're struggling to, you know, how much do I speak up? You know, am I going to be seen as too aggressive? You know, and these are the common things that I've coached people on. And I realized that if I could just put it in a book, I can scale that. I still do a little bit of coaching, you know, once or twice a week still. And, you know, it's going to take me another 8 years to get to another 1,000 people, but it's an honor when I have time to do it. But it is something which I think I just want to distill all of those conversations into a place and hand it over to people.
Yeah. Well, I just love that about you. And it just reminds me, kind of takes me back. Cheryl had said something about you. She said, your commitment to building great products is matched only by your passion for helping other people and especially women. And so that is precisely what you're doing with your book. You want to help people, and it's a way to get your message out there in a bigger way. So gosh, Deb, we probably should have broken this up into two podcasts, because I've got so much that I want to talk to you about. But I would love for you, before we go into something extra, I'd love for you just to touch on mentors and sponsors, and you've had both. You know, we've already talked about Sheryl Sandberg. I love this though. You said when you went to PayPal, you were brought in as a product manager, but you went and admitted to your boss. I think it was Amy Clement. You said she was VP at the time. You went and admitted to her that you really had no idea what you were supposed to do or how to approach the role. What did she do?
You know, she hired somebody straight out of business school. I was, you know, all of what, 26 years old. And I said, I have no idea what you actually hired me for. Because I kind of fell into the interview. I was at a career fair and they said, you know, and I just wanted to go to the table. I went to Tim Wenzel and Catherine Wu were sitting there. And I said, I'm an eBay seller. I love PayPal. And I was walking away. They're like, do you want to interview for a job? And I said, no, I'm actually, you know, we want to move back south. And they said, well, just come. You can come tomorrow and see the PayPal office. And I couldn't resist actually seeing the office of a startup that I really admired. So I went and they set up a bunch of interviews and they asked me a bunch of questions, like, what would you build? And I am a very opinionated customer. And so I had tons of ideas. And then they said, okay, we're making an offer. And I thought, but what's the job? No one actually told me. And so I went to my skip level manager, Amy, and I said, by the way, I have no idea what a product manager does. And she said, all those things you said in the interview, we should build. You go build that. And I'm like, well, how do you do that? And she hired someone so green. But she taught me so much. My manager also taught me so much. It was such an opportunity for me to learn at the feet of people who are just huge innovators in a space that had not had a lot of innovation. And within a couple years, when my manager left, I had managed people for maybe a year, and my manager left, and she offered me his position. And she didn't have to do that. I was probably completely unqualified, but she was my sponsor. She said, look, why don't you take the interim role? If it works out, I'll give you the full role. She had probably no business doing that, but that accelerated my career so much.
Yes.
And I was leading the product for the biggest line of business at the company. And I thought, what am I doing? But she had a lot of faith in me, and I didn't want to let her down. And so, and that led to such an amazing career in so many ways because she trusted me even when she shouldn't have. And so many times, a sponsor, and we talk about mentors and sponsors, mentors are people who give you advice. They help you because they give you their wisdom and experience, and it's very objective. A sponsor is like, I'm putting my name on the line so that I'm giving you an opportunity maybe you don't deserve, but I believe in you enough that I'm going to put my reputation on the line to make it happen for you. And your job is to live up to what they believe and the opportunities they open the doors for. And I share that story because that is how your career accelerates. It's not these linear moves, it's the step function moves. And it's usually given to you by somebody who says, you know what? I think Lisa could do so much more. And I'm going to try something that maybe everybody else is going to think is a mistake, but I'm going to give her that chance.
Yes, I love that. I love that. And you've got like so many stories and we don't have time for, but the challenge for maybe if you're sitting there and you say, I don't have a sponsor, I don't have a mentor. Well, there's ways to do that. And I mean, even I was having a conversation with someone yesterday about the whole mentoring thing. And it's like, go ask somebody, look at who you admire and say, would you be willing to mentor me? And the worst thing that can happen, I tell you what, the worst thing that can happen is them just say, I don't have time right now. Right. But I guarantee you, Deb, and I know that you've had the same thing. Even when people ask you that, even if you don't have the time, it's flattering to the person. Right. I mean, you're giving
Absolutely.
them a gift really by just asking. So, yeah, there's so much more that we could talk about there, but I do, this is called Something Extra, Deb, and I would love to hear from you. What you believe is the something extra that every leader needs.
I think every leader needs intentionality, making choiceful decisions and deciding every single day what you hope to accomplish. The best leaders in the world make choices. They have a plan, they have a vision. And I coach a lot of people, and I, they say, I'm choosing between these two jobs. What do you think? And I say, well, where do you want to go? Like, where do you want to be in 5 years? And so many of them don't know. And I said, I can't help you get to a place you don't know where it is. And so have an intention, which is I want to achieve X by X time. And then get there. You are going to get there faster if you know where you're going to go. And so much of what I do and the coaching I do and the writing I do is really about being choiceful, saying, I want this, but not that. Saying no to the things that don't make sense and saying yes to the things you want to invest in and spending every day choosing what you want to invest your time in. And so I think that intentionality is so important, and that every moment that you're choosing the thing that you want, as opposed to just allowing life to carry you along.
That's beautiful. So good. I could not agree with you more. And it's one of the things that somebody asked me recently, my greatest leadership challenge. And I said, sometimes it's the discernment, between the good and the best. And because there's all kinds of things we could be doing. Right, Deb? But if it's not marching you toward that, kind of the Stephen Covey start with the end in mind, if it's not marching you toward that goal, then it's probably not something you need to be doing, So I think that is the intentionality is so critical. Well, I could talk to you for like hours and hours and hours. I seriously could, but I don't want to keep you any longer, Deb. I appreciate your time so much. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your story, your journey on the Something Extra podcast today.
Thanks for inviting me. It's wonderful.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.